two people are reading LaRouche at this point. That's Carolyn and Roxy. And I'm reading LaRouche, and there's a new book that we made a video on, or I showed it during the video, Remediating Bob is the name of the video. It's called, and this is Linda LaRouche's book, 2001, so a long time ago, but I had not read it. It's called The Economics of the Newosphere. Interesting title. So I'm halfway through it, and I've made a lot of notes of statements by LaRouche that we could say are ionic or echo the metaphysics of ion, which is pretty hard to do because ion really doesn't have any metaphysics, doesn't engage the mind. And LaRouche is definitely a mind operation. But it seems to me, I've sort of felt this about LaRouche for years, that he's trying to describe something beyond the mind, even though he's got to use words and concepts. So we begin with, now, Carol, you've got the Kindle, right?
Yes.
So if I give you a page number, that doesn't help.
Yeah, I can go by page.
Okay, so we're going to page 27, which is in the chapter called Shrunken Heads in America Today. And it's, if it helps you, you put a word in. Education and Humanity is the section. Does that help to go to Education and Humanity? And that'll take you to page 21, and then you just slip along to page 27.
Okay. Yeah, I can type in page 27. Okay, I'm here.
All right, you'll see a paragraph that begins, "This quality of knowing," and knowing is in italics. See that?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Here's a statement before that. You don't need to slip back. LaRouche says on page 26, by know, K-N-O-W in quotes, I mean, first of all, discovering paradoxical evidence, the kind of evidence which shows that reality contradicts absolutely what ivory tower assumptions such as those of Ptolemy, Copernicus, and Tycho Brahe assume still today to be universally true. I mean also solving the paradox posed by that contradiction. I mean, so the word know means solving the paradox. I mean, you know, Carol, I think I'll go to another room because we got a bit of echo here, right?
Okay.
Yeah, just...
While you're moving,
yeah.
I think of the ion, know, how he tells us that we should know.
Yes. And...
Yes.
And
he calls that the newing.
Yes, the newing.
Yeah.
Yeah, K-N-E-W. So LaRouche is... emphasizing no in italics, and like ion does. And let me just get the light here. So, continuing, he means by no, LaRouche says, also solving the paradox posed by that contradiction. I mean, discovering or rediscovering through the perfectly sovereign cognitive powers of one's own individual mind a Socratic form of hypothesis, which can be shown physically to be universally true, and is therefore an experimentally validated universal physical principle.
What, so there I think of ion, how they always say, what, 100% without fail or exception, universally true. Do you think that
yes.
is similar to ion? Okay.
Yeah, and... And he's talking about the cognitive powers of the mind. We're going to see that that includes thought and statement, declaration. It's not just old-fashioned mind he means by this. Mm. But that'll unfold. So this the through the perfectly sovereign cognitive powers of one's own individual mind, a Socratic form of hypothesis, italicized, which can be shown physically to be universally true and is therefore an experimentally validated universal physical principle. So there's the emphasis on physics or in physical matter. What you know in that way, and only in that way, is as much as you actually know about anything.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to talk about this knowing isn't sense certainty, S-E-N-S-E. It's not a kind of certainty. What you know in that way, and only in that way, is as much as you actually know about anything.
Okay, but Ion would say that when we know something, it is on the physical and on the sensory level. It is...
Yes, that's going to be brought in by LaRouche differently.
Okay.
Or with that goal, but he's working around normal
thinking
habits.
Thinking of knowing, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So then this key paragraph comes next on page 27. This quality of knowing, and it's italicized, as distinct from the beast-like ability to learn... Knowing is not learning. This quality of knowing is once again the essential, absolute distinction which sets the human species apart from all lower forms of life. In theological terms, this is the specific quality of the human individual which is reflected in Genesis 1. And he has a statement, man and woman as made equally in the image of the creator of the universe and thus commanded to assume dominion within that universe. That is in accord with the human individual's kinship to the nature of the Creator. Then LaRouche says, this is no mere hand-me-down tradition. It is a scientific fact, as readily demonstrated as if that chapter of Genesis had never been written. Sometimes, as the Apostle Luke writes, we must, quote, let the stones cry out.
Oh, no. Yeah, there's an Ion.
Yeah. Let the stones cry out. So there's LaRouche channeling ionically. So that's page 27. That's the first quote I highlight. Then I go to page 81. Maybe that you can go by the numbers. And I get the next ionic kind of echo. So I'm reading along and I say, that sounds like ion. So I make a little note. So are you at... the section that begins the issue of tracing.
Got it?
Yes, so Roxy likes to talk about tracing, which is...
Metanoia.
Metanoia, right. And repenting. So,
that's a big part of LaRouche's work.
Yes.
Like he understood that to understand what's going on now, he had to go back in history... And the connections he made and
relive
conclusions.
That's his educational program. The kids have to redo all the discoveries that the historical famous thinkers made. Redo the experiments.
He realized that what we learn is not what he found out.
Right.
That everything is so simplified and the connections, for example, I was really surprised to learn some of these connections he discovered, like Machiavelli being a friend of Leonardo, and that their work together would result in creating America.
That's right. Machiavelli is who you were saying. Machiavelli.
So those are
worked.
The types of connections and conclusions he gets from this recreation, and it's really impressive what he does.
Yeah, because Machiavelli is such a bad name, and nobody looks at him as a positive thing, and yet he worked with...
And a lot of obscure names that one doesn't even ever hear about.
Yeah, like Luca Pacioli. Luca Pacioli is one very important colleague of Leonardo da Vinci. So just before that, Carolyn, he says, first, as to the existence of the human species as such... Like LaRouche tries to prove there is a human species. Doesn't take anything for granted. To situate the existence of mankind with respect to the phenomena of both European civilization in general and globally extended modern European civilization as well, let us box in the issue of the origins of human life by aid of the following observations, once again on the implications of the work of Vernadsky. Vernadsky is the guy who coined the word noosphere. He's the Russian thinker who LaRouche thinks is way more important than Teilhard de Chardin, who most people associate noosphere with him.
Hmm.
Now, I don't know if Vernadsky said the word noosphere, but he goes into details about it, which are what LaRouche wants people to know. So in this next paragraph, he says, the issue of tracing the origins and development of human life on Earth must begin with the fact that the uniquely cognitive form of life, mankind, exists. So the fact that we can cognize or know or perceive and be in the big now is the opener of how you decide whether we had a past.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of tracing the origins and development of human life on Earth must begin with the fact that the uniquely cognitive form of life, mankind, exists. Not only must human existence have begun at some point in the development of the Earth's biosphere, but certain preconditions within the biosphere as a whole process had to have been satisfied for that emergence of man to have occurred. Inevitably, for many, the most shocking, even stunning implication of Vernadsky's portrait of both the biosphere and the noosphere is that what he cites as his experimental evidence points implicitly to the appropriate dating of the occurrence of a principle of life, and also of a principle of cognition, as located in whatever might be considered the beginning of the existence of the universe. So this is not a material beginning. Later, if I come across the quotes, he's saying that there could not be life unless it was already pre-set up by something else, which turns out to be our own cognitive process. So there's the past, present, future, as Ayan talks about it, being planted in the past, and you can't know anything unless you already experienced it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's beginning to talk like that. So
is this part of in the beginning was the word then?
Yes, he talks about that sentence, but it's not the way you normally talk about it. There is no beginning,
right?
LaRouche is going to say. If there was a beginning, it already was. It already happened. The beginning already happened before the beginning.
It is a real strange situation. The situation we are at, we have the mind and reason, and then we are in a reality where this sometimes doesn't apply, like in a linear, logical,
right,
visual.
LaRouche says that all the time. It's not linear.
It took a long time for me to realize this. Now we can understand quantum and other aspects of reality, the many dimensions.
Mm.
And we understand that there is no beginning.
Right.
So there are this type of paradoxes or contradictions with the labyrinth of the mind that somehow made it also very hard to be a human being, because we need to overlay, like, understand.
Yeah.
What are we? What is our function in this universe? And then at the same time, we don't get an answer. We have to go beyond the mind into what some people call spirituality or metaphysics. Or the ionic, the non-physicality,
right.
Some other type of explanation.
Yes, we're going to see that that LaRouche means by the mind the non-physical. So that's what's interesting. So,
oh.
Yes, and so LaRouche is taking, and it's very difficult what you're trying to say, and LaRouche is always in all his books trying to say, which is very hard to do. So he always says it begins with paradox and then somehow resolving it. And he says this happens in all arts, in all sciences, real classical art, real science, real experiments, real labor is based on understanding the resolution of these paradoxes. So I just want to read that again. The issue of tracing the origins and development of human life on Earth must begin with the fact that the uniquely cognitive form of life, mankind, exists. Not only must human existence have begun at some point in the development of the Earth's biosphere, but certain preconditions within the biosphere as a whole process had to have been satisfied for that emergence of man to have occurred. So certain preconditions had to happen. Inevitably, for many, the most shocking, even stunning implication of Vernadsky's portrait of both the biosphere and the noosphere is that what he cites as his experimental evidence points implicitly to the appropriate dating of the occurrence of a principle of life and also of a principle of cognition. That's part of life, is cognition. Is located in whatever might be considered the beginning of the existence of the universe. So LaRouche is saying there are three levels. There's the non-living processes, then there's the living processes, that's the biosphere, and then the third level, human creativity, human cognition, is the noosphere, the world of ideas. But LaRouche has a very peculiar meaning for ideas. Okay, so then the next paragraph, page 82, says, to restate that crucial last point, if life is not derived, in fact, as by evolution, so he doesn't necessarily agree with Darwinian evolution. To restate that crucial last point, if life is not derived, in fact, as by evolution or otherwise, if it is not from a universal physics of non-living processes, so if it didn't come from non-living, and if life is, that's italicized, and if life is, as Vernadsky argues experimentally, a demonstrably efficient universal physical principle in its own right, then life always existed as a principle of our universe. So I'll read that again, get the right rhythm. And if life is, as Vernadsky argues experimentally, a demonstrably efficient universal physical principle in its own right, then life always existed as a principle of our universe. No beginning. Now imagine what Western philosopher writes like that. You know, it's pretty unique, I think. I haven't read every philosopher, but what he's talking, he's linking physical principles that are discovered by science to show that life always existed as a principle of our universe. Then he says, the same kind of experimental proof applies to the principle of cognition, which among all perceptible phenomena was, from the beginning, unique to those human forms of life which emerged later. So Ion says that nature and the beasts are non-physical, and that humans are physical, and humans create everything. That's what LaRouche is kind of saying here. It all comes from the human form. Yeah, go ahead, Carolyn, first.
Yeah, look at what he said. All perceptible phenomena was, from the beginning, comma, unique to those human forms which emerged later. So it's like the cognition was there before
yes.
the humans.
Yep.
Okay.
And that's sort of our non-physical or our ascended self or
yeah.
something before this.
Physical, yeah. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, go ahead, Roxy.
Yes, he's also like in admiration of the fact that men create things, processes, substances, objects that doesn't exist in what some call the first nature.
Yeah.
And what people believed before was the nature created by God.
Right.
And humans had the power to affect the first
nature
and create the second nature with their creations. Like, there are many substances, processes, like in chemistry, that are not in nature, that had been created by human. And that's what McLuhan was always trying to explain, how these creations had a lot of effects in the environment and in human perception and even in our biology.
Yes.
And, like, I was asked by somebody to write an article about biking. And because of my influence, I start thinking a little about what McLuhan will say about bicycles.
Right.
And it's really interesting how bicycles affected, like, for example, the autos,
yeah,
the environment, and they're even one of the facts that were very important for women's liberation.
Yes. the bicycle paths were the first routes for automobiles that came later.
Yes, rich women were the first to be able to have this mobility, and that affected the way they dressed because they had to wear these sort of like bloomers, like pants.
Yeah.
And they stopped using corsets.
Yes.
And so they have the freedom to move. Before that, woman would have to ask the husband or the father if they could use the horses or the carriage, and they had to be always with somebody.
Yeah.
And I was reading about woman biking in Berlin at the beginning, and these were very rich women because a bike will cost the salary of a man, because women will get less pay, for a whole year.
Mm.
A whole year of saving a man's salary will cost the bike.
Mm.
And the bikes were created because there was a very, very, very cold winter. And they had to eat the horses here in Europe.
Right.
And so there were no horses, and people needed to move in using some type of vehicle that didn't need the horses. So the bikes were created because of that. And then they started altering the environment, like you said, because the roads were for horses. And then they needed these rich men that were the bike owners were biking on the sidewalks. And there were a lot of accidents.
Mm.
So they started creating their own little roads for the bikes.
Yes.
And then they became an environment in the 50s. But a lot of women really needed the bike to do many things. So this mobility really helped in emancipating women.
Right.
Just to have the freedom to move. And also it affected the way the workers were thinking, because before they were like bonded to a fabric, to a boss. And just the fact that they could move and they could maybe work somewhere else, made them think they can quit their jobs and go to other places where they could have better conditions. And they started organizing and the
union.
Asking for other conditions because of this mobility.
Okay, so let me go back to this issue. That's really interesting what you're saying there. Yes.
No, but I'm just it's just a little example of how some creation of human, anything, will have a lot of effects that we don't even are aware of.
Right, and that's what LaRouche
created.
After I got familiar with LaRouche's writings 20, 30 years ago, I started to notice he was talking about the effects of technology like McLuhan did, but from more of an efficient causality. So here's what his general metaphysical point is that fits what you're saying. So the biosphere, like the image that Ion uses of the triangle going down into the upside-down triangle, so Mercator, I think it's called, and so that's spirit coming into matter. But one triangle penetrates the triangle below. LaRouche says the biosphere, the living process level, injects into the non-living process and influences that. And the noosphere, our non-physical, our world of ideas, injects, that's the human level, injects into the biosphere and changes it. So the ideas that led to bicycles changed the biosphere. That's what you were saying. All right, so the noosphere is on the third level, and that's the...
Yes, and ideologies, you know, like in the workers, in women, I mean, the effects are really impressive in many levels. Like, we're really, like, McLuhan is always warning. Like, you are not aware of all the effects some new technology is going to have. And
right.
Usually, when there's a lot of innovation, he says there is war first.
Yes. And we had a war.
The environment is destroyed.
Our new technologies caused this whole Supreme Court issue and much emotion about it. You know, all that's being caused by the
financial crisis. That was something Ion made you aware of since the beginning.
Yeah.
In 2008.
Well, we had so imploded by 2008, and I came on James' show in January 2008, and the collapse happens in September, that me explaining the financial system in these terms caused the collapse. You've heard Ion say that many times. Bob and James caused the collapse in 2008. That's because we were broadcasting, and I was speaking without interruption for 45, 50 minutes each week, and had never been given that opportunity before. So the next, just to read just the next paragraph, to replay it, to restate that crucial last point, if life is not derived, in fact, as by evolution or otherwise, from a universal physics of non-living processes, so it's before the non-living, and if life is, as Vernadsky argues experimentally, a demonstrably efficient universal physical principle in its own right, then life always existed as a principle of our universe. The same kind of experimental proof applies to the principle of cognition, which among all perceptible phenomena was from the beginning unique to those human forms of life which emerged later. So you get that, Carol? The principle of cognition is the principle of life. So that's a different idea than what the mind is. He's trying to expand our limits and definitions of cognition by intertwining it with science and biology. Okay, so that's page 81.
And another thing that I think is very important that Dion always says, we have a knowing, a knowing.
Yes.
That we usually think we have to learn something to know. But it's like there is something in us that already knows everything, that is connected to a major intelligence that somehow this.
Which is what LaRouche is saying. We don't know nothing unless it's already been known by us. And so he has a phrase for this, the simultaneity of eternity. That's his definition of the big now.
And that's what I've been experiencing, that I think the archetypes have this function of triggering this knowing. And
yeah.
That's why the ascended ones, that one that somehow the few that ascended every time will put these archetypes in the cathedrals, in buildings, so that the next ones will be able to trigger this knowing.
Yeah, that had happened before. Okay, I just want to move on. So what is it you were saying there? Okay, so I'm going to the next page, which is 111, Carolyn.
Okay.
And it begins, to understand the flaws and accomplish. So LaRouche, he has a chapter on classical music and science, classical drama and science. He's always putting art and science together because the same realizations in resolving paradoxes is being done in both disciplines. And then he says it applies to statecraft. So did you find this, page 111, Carolyn?
Yeah, but it's a whole bunch of numbered phrases. So I don't know what that is. Tell me the words.
I'll read the first part.
Yeah.
To understand the flaws and accomplishments of all classical tragedy. Do you see that sentence?
Looking, searching. Nope. Just go ahead, though. I'll find it.
It's to understand the flaws. Can't you just put that phrase in and it?
There's like to understand. It's got 39 results.
Okay, put in Homeric epics.
Yeah. Oh, There's six. Page 111.
Yeah.
Okay. Go.
Okay. To understand the flaws and accomplishments of all classical tragedy, from the Homeric epics through Schiller's dramas, real history must be read and portrayed with the eyes of Plato's dialogues. See, mm-hmm. Plato's dialogues, Socrates, is drama. Mm-hmm. Most people, it is usually not presented that way.
And the way they use this mural of Raphael, in which you see Leonardo and Frank the First.
Well, I was just going to say that, Roxy. You know, LaRouche goes into that painting, but the important point of that painting is it shows the simultaneity of eternity. It has people from a stretch of 1,000 or more years all in the same plaza.
Mm. Yes, they're part of a discussion.
Yeah.
Yes. School of Athens.
Yeah.
And that's the name of the mural.
It's a great painting of the noosphere that everybody, alive or dead, is engaged in it.
Yes, and then there is a woman showing the palm of her hand in the middle of the painting.
Yeah.
That is, like, very weird. And Ion told us because there is a name on her hand. And that's what Ion is.
Right, LaRouche misses that part. But just doing LaRouche here, to understand the flaws and accomplishments of all classical tragedy, from the Homeric epics through Schiller's dramas, real history must be read and portrayed with the eyes of Plato's dialogues as an exercise in the search for cognitive discovery of important truth. So it can be done musically, or by painting, or by sculpture, or by statecraft in politics, or by, what am I leaving out, science.
Alchemy.
What?
Alchemy.
Right. Search for cognitive discovery of important truth. Then LaRouche says, together with Plato's devastating moral criticism of the greatest classical Greek tragedians before him, so Plato criticized Aeschylus and the guy begins Sophocles, whereas Schiller, he criticized classical philosophy. So here's this guy making theater to criticize classical philosophy. The comparison of Schiller's treatment of Joan of Arc to Shakespeare's tragedy of Hamlet shows that higher level in Schiller. So Schiller's higher than Shakespeare. As Plato's dialogues supersede the methods of such great artists as Aeschylus and Sophocles. So I'll read that again. Together with Plato's devastating moral criticism of the greatest classical Greek tragedians before him, Schiller's historical studies, like Plato, as reflected in his dramas, typify what should be understood by the term classical philosophy. The comparison of Schiller's treatment of Joan of Arc to Shakespeare's tragedy of Hamlet shows that higher level in Schiller, as Plato's dialogues supersede the methods of such great artists as Aeschylus and Sophocles. So I put Ion in there as Ion presents itself as a dialogue.
Yes, and at the time of Schiller's time, there was this painter, Friedrich Casper.
How do you spell that? I don't know what you're saying.
Well, there is a painter that he made a painting called The Monk at the Beach.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Bob. But it's like a very cold, almost abstract, almost like a Rothko painting,
mm-hmm.
in which you see a very dark sky, then the sand, and a small figure, but you see the back of that man standing on the beach, which is like a monk.
Yeah.
So you see this man alone in desolation, but somehow, like, we usually think, like, monks are... they isolate themselves because they meditate and they want to know, like, higher,
yeah.
sublime knowledge of what's the meaning of life and what is human and all this. And that's like a painting that summarizes the time in which Schiller was living, like artists and thinkers. This was the time where the Industrial Revolution is so strong, and you see all these fabrics polluting the world, destroying nature, changing the environments very drastically. And all these people want to go back to nature. They want to reconnect with something higher. And there is this neo-Gothic in Germany again that Schinken and Schiller were like into these ideas of reconnecting with what we would call the non-physical. They were into the sublime or the higher.
Okay, so you mentioned the sublime. On this page 111, it says at the bottom of the page, Schiller's greatest achievement beyond what Shakespeare accomplished at his best lies in Schiller's degree of emphasis upon the principle of the sublime. This distinction is shown most efficiently in his treatment of Joan of Arc. Classical tragedy tends too often to show how a society destroys itself, often by the deep going moral defects of those it has chosen to place in positions of great authority, as we might be worried about the newly inaugurated President George Bush today. That's in 2001. That is useful and uplifting for the audience, which recognizes the possibility of a willful choice of alternative to tragedy. However, it were better to affirm the alternative, which, as in the real-life case of Joan of Arc treated by Schiller, locates the higher meaning of life and purpose of action, as in Beethoven's Opus 132 String Quartet, in the sublime. See, he's got here President Bush, the sublime, Beethoven, Joan of Arc. You see how he mixes it up? And then he has the next paragraph. What we may claim or might strongly suspect to have been known from such an actual history of ideas in italics, must be defined in two quite distinct but connected categories. And then it goes into that, but I'm not going into that. So back here, I have Ion in reference to the search for cognitive discovery of important truth. And LaRouche brings in music, philosophy, and Plato and drama, Shakespeare and Schiller, and then relates it to the sublime. So that's page 111. And then you go to page 133. And this is a great section. It goes for many pages. And LaRouche points out how bad science, which is the British science of empiricism and positivism, is equal to the fundamentalist delusions of Bible literalists.
And also Darwinism, like
yes.
In doping, they talk about these things, about the empire, how they are promoting with science fiction this idea of what the Romantics
yes.
were into the sublime
yeah.
and the Neo-Gothic. They were trying to retrieve these other aspects of human creativity, because at the time of the industry.
Yeah, but let's not go into that. We have a time limit here. You can only go until 7:30. You mentioned romantic. The romantic is the enemy of the classical.
Yes, but the thing is, with the Industrial Revolution, they were like really wondering, is progress really good?
Right.
We're destroying nature, we're destroying men, like the conditions workers.
Yes,
and the
British oligarchs strengthened the negative interpretation. Yes, technology is bad. And LaRouche then cites all these thinkers who said, no, technology is good. So that's the argument.
Idealization of nature, the first nature, but actually we have come to the understanding that both is one.
Right, they're the
and
cognitive.
Science and spirituality is one. That we don't have to make this war between nature and technology
right.
or spirituality.
Because there's
science.
A principle, and the principle is the cognitive power. they're all subsumed in life, and life is the creative power of the human cognition. That's what Ion says. Our